This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Bears fans, this is Take the North.
What's the reason to duck? It's here. There's no reason to duck.
With your hosts, Dan Wiederer and Mark Grody.
We're going to take the North and never give it back.
Welcome into the Take the North podcast presented by Odyssey. I am Dan Wiederer of the Chicago Tribune. Pleased to be joined today by a very special guest, an addition to the Chicago Tribune's Bears coverage staff. I was going to introduce the guy sitting here to my left, I guess, to the right, if you're watching it on the YouTube screen. But I'm going to let him do it. We're going to do a little Sunday Night Football style introduction here for our new edition at the Tribune and a special guest here on Take the North. Take it away, young man.
Ooh, so this is good. So does this mean I have to like get my game face, my serious face on?
It's got to be super serious, and it's got to be like, you know, you are getting ready to take the field for your first series of a primetime game.
I'm about to go up against Joe Tooney right now. He's there standing across from me. All right. Sean Hammond, Lincoln Way East.
Very nice.
That's Sean Hammond. The high school out there. Shout out to the high school.
That's Sean Hammond from Lincoln Way East. I'm Dan Wiederer from Maine South. And we are new teammates on the Bears beat for the Chicago Tribune. I'm super excited to have Sean by my side on the day-to-day grind, but even more excited to have him here on the podcast because we've got a lot to talk about. We will get to some Bears stuff in a minute, but I want to give our audience a little bit better feel for your path to this point. And so Lincoln Way East. So that means you grew up in Frankfort or Lincoln Way?
I actually grew up in Mokena, which the district has changed. You know, they closed a school a few years back. And so actually Mokena kids don't go to Lincoln Way East anymore, but I'm from Mokena. I went to Lincoln Way East and went to the University of Illinois, which I know you're familiar with.
I am familiar with that. I also went to the University of Illinois. And just so that our audience knows, you and I actually met at a career night at the Krannert Center down there. I guess that's Urbana. That's on the other side of the quad.
Yeah, that's true.
From where I went. But that's a ways back now, but it also doesn't feel that long ago. I think that was 2014 because I remember the stage of life I was in. And you probably remember the stage of life you were in, which
yeah,
was very
absolutely
different at that time.
Way back when. It's crazy to think about now that I'm stepping in and, you know, I'm joining your team. And that's pretty cool opportunity for me just to see this kind of come full circle with you and I.
I was one of there was like 10 or 11 panelists or something that night at that career night. And I remember it was you and Jamal Collier that came and approached me after that was over just to introduce yourself. And as I do whenever I speak at a college, I say, hey, keep my email address handy, my cell phone handy. And you never know. It's interesting. You and Jamal both found your way to the Chicago Tribune.
Jamal's my guy. We were he was a year older than me. He covered the Bulls for a little while here at the Tribune, and now he's doing great things with ESPN. That was it's definitely crazy to think about just where we are now, you know, 10, 11 years later, however long it is.
Just to depress me, what year did you graduate?
So I graduated in 2015.
Okay. So it was a couple years after I did.
You gotta fill us in now. What year did you graduate, Dan?
2003, maybe 17. I graduated in 1998.
Okay, there you go.
I actually stuck around for the following school year because I graduated early, and I didn't want to enter the real world. And so I worked in the athletic department down in Champaign, and stuck around and was a college kid for one more year. And it was great to not have to go to class.
But I'm sure that was fun.
It was a good year. We won't get into those stories until like the fifth or sixth time that you're here on the podcast. Have you had a moment yet? Like, I know it's like, this is a different era, and like your first day on the job at the Chicago Tribune, you didn't even go anywhere. It was all just like virtual training and all that stuff. But have you had a moment yet, Sean, where you've had that moment, like where you say to yourself, man, I'm covering the Bears for the Chicago Tribune.
It's weird because like you said, my first day was remote. That's the world we live in. Like I actually haven't been down to the office yet. I'm only here in week two, so hopefully I get down there soon. And you know, I've been on the Bears beat for 5 years at this point. And so I walked into the media room and it's like, I'm back in the media room. Like this is where I've been coming for the last 5 years. And so, I suppose the only moment is seeing your first story up on the website. And, you know, we actually, my wife and I went and found ourselves a physical copy, which we, walked over to CVS here in the neighborhood. We're in Andersonville up on the north side in the city, and seeing your name in print, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, you got to commemorate those milestones. I remember for me, this was back in the day where we still had the Tribune Tower in our possession. And my first day was in September of 2013. And I took the Metra down to Ogilvie and got on the water taxi down the Chicago River over toward the Wrigley building.
Great.
Just remember kind of having those goosebumps. You know, I had come from Minnesota. I was in North Carolina before that, obviously grew up here. And I just remember getting off the water taxi and walking up the stairs and then through that little tunnel through the Wrigley building toward the Tribune Tower and being like, damn, like this is legit now. And like everything that you've worked for, you got a chance to do it. So it's going to be fun. You do mention that you've been on the beat for 5 years. So there's not a whole lot that I have to introduce you to or don't even have to show you around. You already have a key card. You know, the key faces in the building, the way to the locker room, all those things are huge. And so look, like we are entering a pretty pivotal time here with the Bears. And I imagine that in your own pivotal period that you're feeling the transition here of the Ben Johnson era and things that are happening for the Bears in a way where it's like, this is another sort of pivot point in Bears history that we've got to be fully dialed in on.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it works out for us and for our team, just that I can hit the ground running. And, you know, I've been around the beat for the last handful of years. I know what's going on in Bears world. I don't have to do a rapid catch up here. And it does feel kind of, it's an interesting time to, I suppose I'll always think of the parallels with Ben Johnson coming in and me moving over to the Tribune. That's always going to be something that happened at kind of the same time. And you know what? If this works out for the Bears, if this turns out to be a great hiring and that's a good thing, maybe he'll be sticking around for more than the normal 4 to 5 years that we've been cycling through here with the head coach.
Just don't count those chickens too early, trust me, because I had that moment, and I've shared that a couple times about the owners' meetings in 2019 where the Bears were coming off a championship season and Matt Nagy was the coach of the year and Ryan Pace was the executive of the year and Mitch was a young ascending quarterback, and you're like, man, all these guys are going to be around here for the next decade. These guys are going to be here for a decade. You get to cover someone for a long period of time, and obviously it didn't work out that way. Was your first season on the beat 19 or 20?
So, I actually was doing like part-time in 19. I was doing the home games and maybe I was up at Hallis like once a week, but 2020 was my first full year on the beat, which I don't have to tell you was a crazy time to do that. Everything was on Zoom. Interview wise, you couldn't really get anything unique because you're watching the same Zoom call as everybody else. It was a really weird time. And then also just like, me coming in and doing this full time, it was hard for me to get to know the other people on the beat because none of us were together except on Sunday home games.
That's the biggest thing I missed in 2020 was just the I guess you would call it slapdickery of the media room and just every day having a chance to like decompress and tell jokes and you're part of that vibe up there and you miss it when it's gone. I remember a couple times just cold calling Mark Potash because I just needed him to tell me a couple jokes, right? Like you're like, I'm stuck in this office here and I can't go anywhere. I just say something funny so I laugh and then I can move out with my day. Because you would ask a question and then you'd be on mute and your day would be over, right? Like you get one or two questions in a day and that would be it. So obviously you're familiar with transition in this organization. You understand what's happening. And once again, we're at a point where the optimism is flowing. You and I combined on a piece for ChicagoTribune.com on Thursday morning, a real talk piece, just about where the Bears are and what they're accomplishing through your eyes. How would you characterize the, I guess, progress and productivity of the first 3.5 months of, 2.5 months of 2025?
Yeah, I mean, look, we all noticed the effort and the attention that they're putting on the offensive line, or at least they did there that first week of free agency. And really before that, with those couple of trades for Joe Tooney and Jonah Jackson, that has clearly been a very concerted effort. I think you can applaud them for that. Like they saw a strong weakness and they knew that they needed to attack that in a multi-pronged way. Ben Johnson was saying at the combine that he did think it was possible to flip that entire interior in one offensive line. And that's what they're attempting to do. I mean, that will be easier said than done. Like it looks good on paper. We'll learn a little bit more once these guys are actually on the field. But I think you can, Bears fans can sort of rest assured that they're approaching that the right way. I feel like, you got Joe Tooney is to me, it feels like a little bit of a shift in the Ryan Poles era where it was all young. Even their free agent addition, Nate Davis was 26 at the time. Ryan Bates is not exactly, I don't even know if he's hit 30 yet. Joe Tooney is different. He's started 146 regular season games in the NFL. That's a total shift in sort of the philosophy. And I think a realization, and maybe that's Ben's influence. Maybe that's just something Ryan came to on his own. Maybe it's both, just that realization that they need some veterans on that offensive line.
So I have this chronic fear, and it's not unfounded with this organization, that because they consistently mismatch the timelines, that they create dynamics that can be troublesome. We saw it when they brought Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy back, and then they drafted Justin Fields. Yeah. And you're like, well, wait a second now. You just drafted a rookie quarterback, but now your timeline is affected by the fact that Matt Nagy has to win to keep his job, right? And everyone always says, oh, they made a mistake not starting Justin Fields right away as a rookie. And my point was, like, if you're Matt Nagy and you've got to win 9 or 10 games to retain your job, there is no chance you're going with Justin Fields over Andy Dalton. You see Andy Dalton as a veteran guy who can help you keep your job. And it ultimately didn't work out. Last year, they keep Matt Eberflus around. And you're like, wait a second. Like, coming out of his second season, there was questions on whether he deserved to keep his job. You kept him around, you paired him with a rookie quarterback, and all of a sudden you infuse the entire building with this win or else pressure that I don't think benefited Caleb Williams in year one. I bring this up because I'm curious on the Tooney signing. The one thing that scares me a little bit is if Ryan Poles is feeling any sort of pressure to produce and succeed to keep his job, does it force you into sort of these like now or never decisions that then alter the dynamics of things? I don't know if that's the case in this particular instance relative to what I talked about with the other two, but what are your thoughts on just that and Poles' job security and whether it may be even subconsciously putting a little boot in their behind this offseason?
Yeah. I hesitate to think that that's maybe the reason why they made a move like this. I do think that there's probably some of that. At the same time, I gotta think Ryan Poles is feeling a little bit more secure just with the addition of Ben. We don't know. We've asked a million times about the details of how long is Ryan under contract and all that stuff. I gotta think that they're gonna at least give this pairing a couple of years together, Ryan and Ben. I do think you know, we talk about, is that sort of a philosophy change? Or at least I brought that up. Like, I do think it's fair to wonder, okay, this is an older guy. Obviously, I say older. How old is Joe Tooney?
32, I believe. Yeah.
He's the same age as me, actually. So no, he's not that old, but he's football old. And you worry about injuries. That's a 100% fair thing. He's been healthy the last few years. He's been playing at an all-pro level. But as of right now, you only got him under contract for 1 year. And so is it a Band-Aid, or is it something that you're going to keep around long-term? I think right. That's a question that they have to answer. And health is going to play a big part in that. And I guess that's why I say, like, on paper, you can applaud these moves. But and same with Jonah Jackson, who was hurt last year and seems to be healthy now. But we'll see how that goes. Like, on paper, this all looks good. But as we know, the Bears often look good on paper in March.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest, over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Nerds! Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Want to travel like a savvy jet setter? No, that doesn't mean monogramming your passport. It means making smart decisions every step of your trip, which means knowing your options. Smart Travel unpacks the facts, like which booking sites actually save money, how to fly first class using points, and if that fancy travel card is a smart investment, all so you can save more on your next adventure. Follow Smart Travel from NerdWallet today and start traveling like a pro.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. It's March, so Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this year. There's just nothing like betting in March. Breakdowns of every region and every game. From conference tournaments to the Final Horn, we'll have the picks and the plays on every single game. Cinderella spotlights, upset alerts, and some of that value for the last team standing. It's tourney time, so hunker down and bet the board with us. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, you should see all the paper championships that they've stacked up in the foyer of Hallis Hall. Look, like the Tooney trade was one that instantly turned everyone's head in the league. Yeah. It came along with the Jackson trade. The first day of free agency, you get a center in Drew Dolman. You go out and you get a released player from Atlanta in Grady Jarrett. And it's like you're still like 36 plus hours away from the official opening of the new league year. And you've added four starters to your lines, and it feels really good. And so, like, it feels like the Bears have been very productive. It feels like they've been very purposeful with their move, and their moves have made sense. So even as kind of the resident skeptic around these parts, you do give them a round of applause, even going back to the hiring of Ben Johnson, of saying you identified where your weaknesses were and you made moves to address them that are pretty encouraging.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. And there hasn't been like a big surprise. I think, I think it was good that the Bears a year ago added a veteran wide receiver. But I also think that we were all a little surprised about that move at that time when they traded for Keenan Allen. Well, I don't know. Where was your head at with that, Dan?
Yeah. I mean, I thought for the launch plan of Caleb Williams that I could understand it, especially on a 1 year trial, that you got the room, you can bring him in, and you've got a guy that you can believe in on those money downs. And so, that one, it was surprising when it happened, but it made sense pretty quickly on what they were trying to do for Caleb.
I'd agree with that. I mean, you maybe have to not, I don't want to say talk yourself into it. That's maybe a little too strong, because Keenan Allen's a great player. He's going to be a Hall of Fame player. But at the same time, like, what they've done this year, every single one of those big additions that you highlighted makes sense for where this team is at, for what they're trying to do, for the type of football that Ben Johnson wants to play. He wants to have this hard-nosed offensive line that's going to punch you in the mouth. Those are all guys who you think are going to be able to do exactly that for your offensive line and hopefully protect Caleb and give him a little bit more time in the pocket when he needs it and just make him a little bit more comfortable back there.
the concept of winning the offseason. I've made my my opinions on this very well known. How do you feel about the quote unquote winning the offseason label that the Bears have been given by many a talk TV show?
Well, yeah, look, it's great for those of us who are writing about the team. It gives us things to talk about when they're making big moves, of course, but none of it is going to matter until they hit the field. And really, I mean, that process starts pretty soon here. April 7th, they get an extra little mini camp thanks to hiring a new coach. All the teams with new coaches get an extra camp. And they're going to hit the field and see what this actually looks like. I mean, you can be excited. I don't fault Bears fans for being excited in March. They added some good players. That's what this time of year is for. And it's cool to be excited. It's good to be excited. We'll see what it looks like come the spring. We'll see what it looks like come training camp in July, because that's when we're going to really get a good feel. You and I and everyone on the beat who's going to be there every day watching training camp, we'll get a feel for what this is actually looking like as it comes together, because it's not always what you think it's going to be.
You talk about me about to start my 13th season, you about to start your sixth. There haven't been a whole lot of exciting Decembers around here, and that's what I'm craving, right? Like, there was a little bit of an exciting one in 2013, my first year on the beat, where the Bears went all the way to the end of the year in contention for the NFC North. But that was in part because the Packers fell off while Rodgers was hurt, and it was a, you know, season-ending division championship game between two teams that were hovering around 500. And then really, I guess you could obviously 2018 and maybe to some extent you could count 2020, because they made a little bit of a resurgence, started the year strong, then went down one of those classic, you know, month long skids, and then regrouped to put themselves in position late in that year to get back in the playoffs. But man, like, what I would do for a December that had some meaning to it, right?
Right. The feeling that this is all building towards January, even, you know, from my experience on the beat in 2020, it felt like, you know, we use the term, they sort of backed into that playoff spot. Oh, yeah. And that was the first year with the seventh seed in the playoffs. And it all felt kind of fluky a little bit. You know, they didn't, there was a bit of a resurgence against a couple of bad teams, but they didn't actually beat anybody. And it didn't have that feel that you're talking about where you're building this thing towards a run in January. And certainly I think Bears fans are craving that just as much as you are, Dan.
Yeah, no question about it. A small move that was made since we recorded our last episode. The Bears signed Devin Duvernay to a one-year deal. That's a depth piece for your receivers room, but more importantly, it's a guy who can come in and compete for your return job. Any reaction to that quick second wave, third wave signing here that the Bears made?
I'm sure Richard Hightower is pumped and excited, the special teams coordinator. And obviously, you know what? You need as many options as you can have in that return game. Obviously he's a really, really good one. And you got to imagine he's going to be a part of this team, you know, unless somebody surprises us, from that return standpoint.
All pro, a few years back, I think he's been to two Pro Bowls. So a guy with some credentials, some skins on the wall,
definitely.
He'll come in and replace that. Look, like, we can focus our attention now a little bit going forward, understanding that the Bears are going to make a handful of moves like this through the end of free agency. But the draft is nearing as well. We're about a month plus out from that, and we know how significant that draft class is going to be. When you look ahead to what the Bears need to get done, both in the first round and with their subsequent six picks, what do you sort of wrap your brain around in terms of the priorities and what will register as success in that phase of the offseason?
Yeah, my opinion and my thoughts on this, and we touched on this in Real Talk over at ChicagoTribune.com. Go read that full piece. You know, I personally feel like there's no reason to get away from what they've done already. Obviously you got a bunch of draft picks. You're going to take some skill players. You're going to take some linemen. There's going to be a mix of things in there. But I think with some of those premium picks, if it's me, I'm sticking with what you've done already, sticking with the meat and potatoes, the big fellas up front. I think, you know, you're going to have a chance to potentially get a really highly rated edge rusher if you want with that number 10 pick. You could also potentially go for an offensive tackle if that's what you're feeling. I know that I think people are thinking really highly of the edge rushers in this draft class. While there's a handful of tackles that look really good, I think you could pick apart, you know, each and every one of them if you really wanted to. But when you look at that full selection, especially those top four picks, I believe it's four in the top 75 or so. I'm looking to get a tackle, get an edge rusher, get a couple of guys who can potentially step in and start for you or compete for jobs for you on both lines right away. I'm okay with you know, if you want to take a running back in the you know, third round, whatever, I'm cool with that too. Like, I think that they need to get another piece there. There's a lot of ways they can go with this. For me, I don't see any reason why you would change what you're doing.
So I was going to say that the Bears have a little bit of that giddiness, like a kid walking into 31 Flavors and looking at that display case and having an option of that something's going to look really good on draft night. But I don't want to mix up your meat and potatoes analogy here. So maybe it's the Golden Corral buffet here, and you've got to get some of that meat and potatoes here before you go to the chocolate fountain later. I offer a little bit of pushback on that, just from the standpoint of the idea of understanding that the draft doesn't end on Thursday night. And I think sometimes in the draft media sphere, there is intense focus on those first 20 picks. And then it's all of a sudden it's like, it kind of recedes and you forget that the entire class comes together through Saturday afternoon. And so I'm okay with the Bears entertaining the discussion of a toy at number 10. And I understand the counter argument, and I understand the people that are passionately against it. But if you feel like an Ashton Jeanty or a Tyler Warren, for example, are chess pieces for a creative mind like Ben Johnson to use to take your offense to levels it hasn't seen in 105 years, then talk about it. Have those discussions in the room and figure out how you can address those other needs, edge rusher, offensive line, interior defensive line, safety, in rounds 2, 3, 5, 7, with the picks you have remaining. And so I'm cool with it as long as you have contingency plans. If you pass on one of those meat and potatoes meals at number 10, make sure you're getting it on day two. You've got three other picks in the top 75. And if you like the depth of those positions and feel like you can get an immediate starter there, then go for it. And so that's going to be fascinating to see kind of how the Bears come down on this. It's the first time that Ryan Poles and Ben Johnson have entered a draft together. And we've felt Ben's passion here in the couple months since he's been hired. And I could see him getting in that room and going, "Oh guys, I got to tell you, you know, like Tyler Warren would be really fun to work with." And if he has that type of enthusiasm about him, you got to listen, right?
Yeah, that's why you brought him here. And I think a whole sort of subplot of this entire offseason is how is Ben's influence is going to change Ryan Poles' thinking or not, or, you know, what is that dynamic? You have a new voice in the room, somebody who's really accomplished, especially on that offensive side of the football. And I do 100% agree that you got to have the conversations. Like, you need to know, and we know how many times they go through these scenarios. Okay, yeah, if Ashton Jeanty's there at number 10, what do we do? Right. They will be having those discussions over the next 4 or 5 weeks as we lead up to the draft here. And they will have a clear plan, absolutely. And I think the Bears are in, you know, they're in a really good position with number 39 overall, number 41. You know, just having those two picks in that range. I mean, if you look at just what they're going to be able to do at the top of the draft, I mean, not many teams are in that position to potentially pass on maybe a position of need, but feel good that they could get that not very deeply into the second round.
What I always say when you're picking in the top 10 is you want to have no regrets like 6 or 7 years from now. And to have no regrets, you try to aim for as sure of a thing as there is. And so while you might be intrigued by a certain edge rusher, a certain tackle, you have questions and you see another player at a position where you're like, "Listen, that guy's going to go to the Pro Bowl 3-4 times and he's going to be a great NFL player," then don't hesitate on that. I think teams tend to overthink that. It shifts me into a little bit of a mindset. I was going to save some of this for Grody in April, but I'm going to bring it back to him in April. But so some of the thoughts surrounding the draft, I want to pick your brain on it because you've been around long enough to kind of foster your own opinions on it. But I really do get fascinated with pre-draft coverage and during draft coverage and post-draft coverage, because I think there can be sort of a skewing of storylines. And so one of the ones that I wanted to bring up to you is just like this idea that a player could be a reach at 10, but no one would second guess the pick at 22. right? Like,
yeah,
take a like a Will Campbell or a James Pierce, right? Like, these are guys that are going to be creating a lot of conversations in the rooms they're in. And you say, well, I don't, you know, Campbell may be a little bit of a extreme example this year, because he will probably go in the top 10 or 12. But like, does that make sense to you? The fact that a guy could be a reach at 10, but not an hour and a half later at 22.
I could see where that argument comes from, but I think if you also got to put yourself in the shoes of the head coach and the GM, if you have a player who you really like, you're not going to pass on him just to hope that he still falls to you later on. Sure, you could trade back, but there's a risk in that. Like, there's a very real possibility that said player is gone if you trade back. So my thoughts on that are, if you like somebody and you feel strongly about them, I think you gotta take that swing when you have the possibility. We've heard Ryan talk so much over the years about how you don't know what's going to happen on draft night. Like, you, even at number 10, that's not very far down the board, but there's, especially with the way the quarterback class is looking this year, there's so many different ways that this draft can go.
Yeah.
There's so many different possibilities of who's going to be there and who's not at number 10. I think you have to take the player that you like when he's there for you and not overthink it.
You and I have already started to assemble our big board for ChicagoTribune.com, which will launch during draft week. And it does give you an idea of, okay, this is going to be a fun menu to peruse on draft night, and particularly when the first nine players come off the board and you're still sitting there with an opportunity to grab a player that can make a difference. When I was first starting out in the league, a couple folks in the Vikings organization said, look, like, you have to look at this through the lens of, do we love this player, like you just said? And if so, is this our last chance to get him? Right. Mm-hmm. And so it's never a reach if you love the player and this is your last opportunity to get them, right? Like, yeah, they won't be around the next time you pick, and you can't just be like, oh, well, we really would have liked to have them, but we were afraid of being criticized for reaching there. Like, it doesn't work that way in NFL front offices, and the Bears are going to have to kind of measure that out as it relates to this class.
Yeah, you can't think that way. You can't afford to think that way because there's just so many unknowns. And like I pointed out, the Bears have 39, they have 41. They're feeling good about the overall depth of the picks that they have and what they can add. But if there's a player there at number 10, you gotta take the swing on him when you have the chance.
Yeah. The other rant that I go on fairly consistently, and I'll give you a chance to unpack it and dissect it and pick it apart a little bit, is this idea of position of need versus best player available. And the reason that I always get sort of hung up on this is because it's sort of this argument that happens on, you know, Good Morning NFL or whatever it's called now, or, yeah, you know, First Take, all those shows, where it sounds great on TV when people are yelling at each other. But the idea that it's so black and white is ridiculous, because that means that you are saying that these players are rated significantly far apart. And so now if you're drafting for need, you're avoiding the best player available. And my other part of this rant, Sean, is best player available according to who? And that's where I always get hung up, because we see redrafts every 5 years and the board never looks the way it did on draft night. And so these lists and these rankings that the draft experts have, that the teams themselves have, they're never right. They are never correct.
No,
they're just a guess. And so it's like this idea, like, oh, you passed on the best player available. Did you? Nobody knows who the best player available is. It's just a guess. And so sometimes I think that argument gets a little bit sort of clouded by the lack of realization that this is all just a guess.
It's all a guess. It's absolutely all a guess. The whole draft process. And you know, we hear Ryan Poles talk about, you know, these guys look at this sort of in buckets. Like, he talks about his blue players, the ones that are on his board in the color blue. Those are, you know, maybe the top 10, 12. It varies year by year. There's no line. Those are the difference makers. And, you know, maybe when you're sitting at number 10, you're in that rare position, that rare luxury spot where you could potentially get one of those guys. Maybe that's the only case where you would actually, you know, not that they would ever tell you that they took their quote unquote best player available. But I think once you get past the very, very top of the draft, there's a lot of blurred lines in what that actually looks like.
And anybody that's been part of a fantasy football draft knows that, you know, there's clusters, there's tiers, there's clouds, as Ryan Pace used to call it. And you're just trying to match talent needs and priorities together in a way that makes sense. I'm going to put you on the spot Because we've had an idea for years that we've never executed at the Tribune. Rich Campbell and I started talking about this probably in 2015. But this idea that the common fan, and maybe we'll put this out to our audience as well, because it's such a guessing game, could have almost as much success putting together a solid draft class as the actual front offices that spend months, years, you know, decades trying to do these things. And so maybe what we will do the week after the draft is take every single pick the Bears made, and we will say, if I was the general manager, if I was the shot caller at that moment, here's who I would have taken, you know, and we'll put together those classes. We'll come back and revisit those 5 years down the road, just for an example of like, yeah, like, I mean, like 2017, for example, you know, yeah. You go through that Bears draft class and you're like, okay, like, could Joe Fan have put together a better five-man class? And that was one of the Bears' better classes, because it was Mitch. You had Tariq Cohen and Eddie Jackson part of that, but you had a big whiff with Adam Shaheen, and then you had a Jordan Morgan flyer late in that draft. And look, like, I think there's probably some people that can make the argument that they could have picked five different players, including maybe Patrick Mahomes or Deshaun Watson, that would have helped elevate that class. So you want to sign up for that, and we'll brainstorm it offline to figure out how to make it work.
You know what? I actually kind of love that. As much as it's making us the guinea pigs, and it's gonna poke fun, I'm sure, 5 years down the line at our thoughts on the draft. But yes, because I don't know how closely, Dan, you watched the offseason Hard Knocks with the Giants last year. But my takeaway after watching that series was like, these are just people in a room. Like, they might have their analytics, their numbers that they're looking at, but it's not that different from the numbers that we're looking at on this side of things.
Yeah, and maybe we'll find an AI component to help us out, and they can pick a draft class as well.
Ooh, I like
okay,
that.
Couple last things I want to get to, and then we'll get out of here with some college basketball talk. But biggest curiosity you have about the union between Ben Johnson and Caleb Williams? I think obviously you mentioned that the new coach mini camp can start in early April. Yeah. That'll be our first time seeing those guys in the same building working together. And that's going to be the center stage story for the rest of the calendar year. What is on your radar in terms of things you're curious about with that union?
My number one thing is, and you know, maybe it's because I'm starting a new job here. I'm in week two at a new job. It's like, you got to think about when you're stepping into a new role, how are you going to interact with the people you're working with? You know, is that teamwork, in what ways is that teamwork going to work? In what ways is that going to be challenged? And I think Ben Johnson, you know, said, yeah, having the quarterback helps during his opening press conference. Caleb Williams was very vocal about wanting to work with Ben Johnson. But these guys have never sat down in a room together and actually looked at film together. They've never, you know, I know they met when Ben was hired, and I'm sure they've had some interactions here, but they haven't been in the building very much together, and certainly not actually doing the work. And so what is that going to look like from a personality standpoint? Because, you know, Caleb is, you know, the number one pick. He's the guy who's had a lot of pressure on him and has a lot of pressure to succeed. Ben is coming in here. He has his past experiences. He's never been a head coach. And so this is somewhat new for him too. And they're talking about walking in there and building an offense together. And they've never actually worked together. And so there's going to be some challenges, I would imagine, that naturally come with that. And we might not see that per se on the football field, but I think that we will learn a little bit in April and May about what that partnership is actually going to look like between two guys who come from very different backgrounds.
Inevitably, these relationships start with excitement, and eventually that excitement turns into frustration. And I think the key to succeeding in this league is, how do you handle those roadblocks and those obstacles of frustration when you encounter them? And that's going to be really interesting. And like you said, it's going to be time tested. Like, there's going to be phases to this where Ben's going to have to sort of set a standard. Caleb's going to have to meet it. Caleb's going to have to communicate how he wants to be coached. The coaching staff's going to have to tailor themselves to that. And that's fluid. That's ever evolving. And there's a steep climb to that challenge, I think.
There is, and we're all going to overreact in week five when Caleb makes a weird face at Ben on the sideline, and you see them, you know, working that out. That's going to be a process, and it's probably not going to be a finished product in year one.
The other football question I have for you to close is, we haven't spent a lot of time this offseason talking about the defense.
Yeah.
I do think that the addition of Dennis Allen is really wise and very calculated in a lot of ways, particularly with the head coaching experience and the defensive track record. He's taken over a unit that's got a lot of returners to it. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you're finding new pieces, and that was the group that was established, and that's the group that was supposed to perform better last year than it did. What are your, greatest where's your greatest intrigue in the defensive reboot now that Dennis Allen is aboard?
My greatest intrigue is honestly, like, can he tap into Montez Sweat? And yeah. I know that a big part of that is what they got going on the other side. They added Dio. I think he's a guy with high upside. I think they could still look to add another guy in the draft, like we're talking about, to fill in on that other side opposite Montez. But Montez is kind of like an interesting dude. Like, you don't, at least, like, a lot of times when we're interviewing him in those settings, it's hard. We don't really feel like we know the real Montez, and Dennis Allen is going to have to sort of tap into that and see what makes him tick. And I know that he was upset. You could tell towards the end of last year, he was not happy with the 5.5 sack total at the end of the year, obviously not happy with the 10 game losing streak. That's, if this defense is going, they talked a lot last year about top five. If this defense is going to be that good, they need him to be a 10, 12 sack type of player.
Listen, they paid him to be one of the premier edge rushers in the league. And you know, to whom much is given, much is expected. And Montez Sweat, I think, is going to have to lean into that in 2025 and find a way to get himself unlocked and get that defense unlocked. All right. Because we're recording this right now, a few hours before the NCAA tournament starts. Certainly this will go live before our alma mater plays in Milwaukee on Friday night. How far you got them going?
Oh man. You know what? I've got them in the Sweet 16, and I actually like the potential matchup against Kentucky. You know, if assuming both those teams get past their first round game, I think those are two high flying offenses. And I think that's a game that Illinois could win. I would be, you know, if they have to slug it out with a defensive team, I'm a little bit less confident that they're going to be able to do that. I kind of see that Kentucky-Illinois game, if that matchup does materialize, as sort of a coin flip.
I was texting with our beat friend, Cassie Carlson from Fox 32, fellow Illini, the other day, and said, I can't wait to come on the air in a couple of weeks and talk about Illinois' magical run to the Final Four, which I've been predicting all season, which we both know is a total lie, because this team has frustrated me more than any Illinois team in a long time, because you have no idea who they are. They have so many signature wins and so many losses that just take your breath away, where you're like, really, you just went to Nebraska and got it handed to you? You know, you just went to Madison Square Garden on a big stage and let Duke beat you by 50. You know, there's just so many moments throughout the year where you're like, I don't see the competitive toughness that last year's team had. I don't see the consistency that's required in March. I don't see the experience. And so I've got them leaving sometime in the first weekend. I don't know when yet. It was Xavier, Kentucky, whoever it may be.
Yeah.
I can't get myself there, but they have every bit of talent and potential to push this thing into weekend two and weekend three if they want. But man, it's been a wild ride with this team more than any that I can remember.
Yeah. I'm with you in that, like, when I'm filling out, you know, I'm the type of person who fills out a bunch of different brackets, and I still can't see them. When I pencil them into the Sweet 16, I'm like, okay, that feels optimistic, but that's about as far as I can take it. You know, I can't take it down that next line because of what you're saying. They're so up and down, and this whole discourse about the North Carolina team feels a lot like Illinois too, where it's like the fans of the team are like, they don't even like this team. Like, they don't even know what to expect from their own team. And that's another one, you know, North Carolina as an 11 seed. They looked great the other night. I'm like, man, I could see that team making a run. I think they got a fairly favorable draw in the next couple of rounds, but you could also see them losing the next game, and that's it.
I think I'm picking them to lose the next game. Ole Miss. And then that game is also in Milwaukee, where Illinois will be. So anybody that wants to make that drive up 94 can get there on Friday and see some high-quality basketball. Well, Sean, this has been awesome. I appreciate you jumping on for the first time.
This has been fun.
Will not be your last time on Take the North for certain. I will say this, like, you and I sat down before you even started at the Combine in the lobby of the Marriott Hotel for lunch. And there I had an energy surge that was really exciting, because I'm excited to see you spread your wings a little bit here. And I'm excited to tap into the battery pack that you are, and we can go do some fun things here in the years ahead.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I feel that same energy too. So I'm ready to hit the ground running here. And yeah, you know what? Anytime you want to have me on the show, I'm happy to be here.
Folks, that's Sean Hammond of Lincoln Way East. I'm Dan Weeder of Main South High School. We're both from the University of Illinois, cover the Bears for the Chicago Tribune. Really good to have you on the show. We will have more in the weeks and months to come. For our producer, Adam Stanzinski, for Sean Hammond, I'm Dan Weederer. Great talk. See you out there.
Thank you, everybody. The Bears.